Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. We have a good conversation ahead of us today. A couple of things we're going to talk about. The next generation. What are they called? Why are they called that? We're going to talk about that here in a little bit with Cassie Moore, DCE, and contributor to the Youth eSource. We're going to talk with her and have her back here on Faith and Family. Always enjoy conversations with Cassie. She does a nice job of really helping us connect with that middle school generation. So we'll talk with Cassie in just a little bit. In the second half of the program, we're going to talk with Chris Brown, president of the National Fatherhood Initiative. National Fatherhood Initiative does some great stuff, and we'll find out more about them in the second half of the program. And why dads, kids, and horseplay, why do they go together? Why is horseplay safe? Is it important? Well, we'll talk with Chris Brown about that in the second half of the program. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin in the sponsor section on our website, kfuo.org. Go look for that CUW logo there. Worldwide KFUO, we are celebrating 90 years of proclaiming the good news of Jesus Christ. 90 years. You've been hearing those history moments with Dr. Paul Deventer throughout the day and throughout the week. Lots of history this week. Neat stuff. Go check out our Facebook page, too. Some really cool pictures. Saw the uploaded pictures of about the next 35 years up through the 80s. So go check that out. Some neat stuff and some familiar faces on there. And if you know someone, tag them. You can go in there and tag somebody in those pictures. Help everybody else figure out who all these people are in the history of worldwide KFUO. And also, you can join in this celebration during the 90 days that we're celebrating 90 years of God's blessings. You can support worldwide KFUO for a suggested donation of $90. You can receive one of these really neat worldwide KFUO iLutheran t-shirt. So you can find out more about that on our website, kfuo.org. Well, joining me by phone this morning, as promised, Cassie Moore, DCE, Director of Christian Education and contributor to Youth eSource. Welcome back to Faith and Family today, Cassie.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
It's good to talk with you, and a little envious of your nice warm weather. I'm sure it's a little cool for you all, but it's nice and warm compared to what we've got here in St. Louis.
You know, I put my time in my lifetime. I lived in Illinois and Minnesota and St. Louis, so I am definitely enjoying living in Florida right now.
I bet. I did get to have a little bit of time there. I saw some pictures of some friends vacationing in Florida the other day, and I thought, oh, I do miss Florida winters. In quotes.
Winter. You know, the kids I work with at the school, they whine when it gets to be about 65 degrees because that's when they don't want to go outside at all. But being a Midwest girl, you know, that to me, that's when you have your windows down because that's a nice time of year.
Exactly. That's when you roll the windows down. That's when you get out and do some hiking, enjoy the beautiful weather. Oh, that younger generation who just maybe they just don't understand it yet. Someday they will. Well, yeah. What have you been up to lately, Cassie?
Well, lately, I have been doing a lot of writing. I have been working with the National Youth Gathering for 2016, so I just have a lot going on. But I also I work as a Lutheran educator in a Lutheran school. So I spend a lot of time. I work with the entire school. So I work daily with kids from the age of 4 years old all the way up to 14. So I love it. It keeps me busy, keeps me entertained, and just always paying attention to this young culture and learning about this new generation, because every generation has its own unique attributes. So it's very interesting to see close up right in my face. What is this generation like? What sets them apart from even my generation? So it's keeping me busy.
That's for sure. It keeps you busy. You're learning and even a little entertained along the way, I see.
A lot of entertainment. Sure.
Well, let's talk about this next generation. We always have conversations about from time to time on Faith and Family about generations and generational studies. This next generation, we've talked about millennials on Faith and Family before. What is this next generation and after the millennials?
Well, this next generation, interestingly, the White House a few weeks ago released a graph, and that graph showed what they consider this new generation to be. So that would be a generation is roughly about a 20-year period. So this new generation, they have dubbed the homeland generation. Homelanders is what we're starting to call them. So that includes everybody that has born about the 2005 is the mark. So 2005, early 2000s and later to the present. So we're looking, you know, right around that 10 to 12 year old is the older edge of that homelander generation right now.
The homelander generation. Each generation has a name that generally reveals something about, you know, a characteristic of this generation. What is it about this generation that makes them the homelanders?
You know, it's interesting because when the White House released this, they didn't really explain why they had chosen this name. It was a small focus group that decided to call this generation the homelanders. So what a lot of people have taken that to mean is that it's coined after the popular TV show. So we would say, you know, there's a lot of ties, and that's really what I have picked up on in working with these kids. There's a lot of ties in this homelander generation to being afraid of terrorists, being living in a world of terror and just different worries, different anxieties. So a lot of people believe that is really why the White House has coined that name for this generation. As generations continue to sort of morph, it's not really until they're in their late teens and early 20s that you can really start to pinpoint exactly what a generation is like. Because you know that these 10 and 12 year olds are still heavily influenced by their parents, obviously. So we will continue to watch this generation and see how they develop. But right now they are showing a definite tendency to worry more than other generations, and they're showing just that they've lived in this world of terror their whole lives. You know, they were the post 9/11 generation, so this world of terror is all that they've really ever known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're talking about children who were born, 2003 and on, somewhere around there?
Yeah, roughly in that period.
So they've always had a number of things. That, yes, there's always been in their lifetime, there has always been terrorism going on. We've always been in some sort of, if not a war, in some sort of dealing with some sort of unrest and terrorism all over the place. But the interesting thing is, compared to previous generations, earlier generations, this generation, I'm sure, is impacted by technology. Each generation has been impacted by technology in some way, but they've been surrounded by technology from birth, right?
Right. And I can tell you, I work with four-year-olds that if I hand them an iPad, they can navigate that iPad faster than I can. We're seeing kids that just, it's second nature to them. And this is something that is a profound difference from even, I'm a part of the millennial generation. I'm at the older edge of the millennials, which is the generation before these homelanders. But that technology and their access to news and to social media and to what's going on in the world has so shaped them. And it is continuing to just be one of the most profound influences in their development. You know, when we talk about they've been born into this world of terror, we're talking they have news that is on their phones, in the palm of their hands. They're listening to it. They're live streaming. They're checking social media. And this is all, you know, before they've hit puberty. So it's a pretty profound change that is happening in this different generation.
So if they're connected 24/7, which is a phrase that has come up in the last, last two decades or so, 24/7, mm-hmm. and probably reflective of their parents' generation. If they are connected 24/7 to technology and media, social media, then they're also connected to what's going on around the world. One more step toward this global society that we live in, one more piece of this global society that we live in. And so if there is unrest, if there is terrorism going on around them, not just in their own community, but around the world, they live in this global community, they live in this global society. So they're all the more aware of what's going on around the world. And generally there's an emphasis of all the dangerous or bad things, the frightening things that are going on in the world around them. So they have more access to that information.
Right. And I think what I have really seen, and this is, a distinct difference, this generation, everything they know, everything they hear from the news, it's all headlines.
Mm-hmm.
This is a generation that they scan the headlines, they see, you know, what's trending out there on social media, but they don't actually read into the stories very often, if at all. So this is, you know, you're right on. This is a generation, we report the bad news, and so they live in this world of seeing these headlines of bad things, you know, Ebola and terrorism and school shootings and, you know, domestic disputes, and all they ever see are these headlines. So in some ways, my fear is that this generation is so so objectively afraid of terror, but they're never seeing the human side. They're never realizing what's actually going on, the full scope, the full picture. Why is this happening? What's going on with these people? You know, who's there to actually to help in these situations? They're just sort of focusing on that attention-grabbing headline.
And you're right. In terms of communication and what we read, you know, in the past we had newspapers, we have radio now, and we've had that for 90 years here at Worldwide KFUO, but we've had various forms of communication that have usually involved reading, especially newspapers and things like that. But you made a great point. They're reading headlines, maybe a couple of bullet points at the most. We're not spending nearly as much time reading today as we have in the past. I wonder how that is going to impact what that is going to mean for this generation, how their brains develop, how their brains are wired. What is it, you know, what is that going to look like in 20 years for us? What is communication, what is mass media going to look like for us in 20 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we just have to wait and see. I think we can accurately say that their brains are being almost rewired to, I think we can expect to see shorter novels, shorter movies, things that just change pace so much more frequently than they used to. You know, even you look at movies that were made 50 or 60 years ago, and it's such a different pace. There's so much more dialogue and less action compared to what you see in today's movies. So you can sort of predict where probably this is going to end up going.
When we, you know, we can think about the factors that shape this generation, the Homelander generation. We can think about those factors, technology, media, those types of things. But another thing that shapes a generation, obviously, is our parents. Who are the parents of this, the Homelander's generation, and what do we know about them, and how do they, how do their characteristics shape the Homelander's generation?
Well, that's a great question. You have a mix of different generations that are really parenting this Homelander generation. So you have on the older edge, you have some baby boomers, you have some Gen Xers, and then you have a mix of millennials too. So you're seeing sort of a wide spectrum, and each one of those generations has their own unique attributes. I think what overrides all of them, that they are all doing together, regardless of what particular generation they're in, is that they are also so connected to technology. I rarely see parents walking around without a smartphone in their hands. You know, they go home and they're on their iPads, they're on their computers, they have the TV on, they have the radio on. And I actually had quite a long discussion with my middle schoolers a couple of weeks ago and said, you know, your parents have these things streaming. They have their radios on, they have their TVs on, you know, they're checking their cell phones. How does that impact you? And most of them said, actually, my parents frequently have the news on, and it makes me physically anxious to hear a lot of these stories, you know, about terrorism, about school shootings. It makes me worried. And a couple of the kids were actually saying, you know, I get sweaty hands, and I get stressed out, and, you know, I worry about what I'm seeing on the news. So we're seeing actually a physical reaction in these kids from these parents. So that's something that, as as educators, as parents, as grandparents, as, you know, teachers and pastors, we have to be aware of the effect that our viewing, our consumption of technology and media, what that's having on our children.
Absolutely. There are times when I catch myself, with my phone or my iPad and thinking, okay, I need to take care of this email, or I'm looking for something, and then I get caught up in it. I just, picked it up to do one or two things, and then I end up getting caught in it and realizing that I'm missing out on an opportunity to interact with my son or do things, to be a faithful dad, because I get caught up in the draw of whatever's going on. I think I'm just going to take care of one email, and then I end up reading through four more.
And that's just human nature, I think, mm-hmm. is we get captured by these things. And I've seen a trend more, and I'm interested to see how this develops in this Homelander generation. I've seen a trend of kids actually being okay putting their phones away or putting their computers away and engaging in the face-to-face more. So it's interesting to think, I think our generations, we tend to sort of shift back and forth from one extreme to another. So it'll be interesting to see if the kids that have been born from parents who are overly connected, if they swing to the opposite extreme and they start to shun technology. We could see sort of that trend.
Sure. Perhaps they become, it's no longer as gratifying as because it kind of the newness has worn off, or it's just not as appealing.
Right.
After it's around all the time, you're kind of used to it. So it's kind of like after you get that fancy new furniture or piece of equipment at home and you really had to have it at the time, and then after a while, it starts to collect some dust.
Mm-hmm.
Any other common factors among this or common characteristics among the Homelanders?
I think one of the things that is very interesting about this group is that they worry incessantly. They worry about so much. And we would look at them and say, you're really a pampered, sort of an entitled generation. But at the same time, there's just so much stress, and we just keep hearing that they're anxious, that they're worried. What I have come to realize is that they have such this high expectations for their lives, but at the same time, they secretly worry if the world will even be around in a decade. And that's a pretty pretty challenging mindset to try to cope with as a teenager or as a young child. And I think that's something that as adults, we need to really pay attention to that, and we need to help them work through that. We have such high standards for them, and we want so much for them. But the reality is they are facing a world that they feel like the world is crumbling, that it can be a totally different reality that they're facing in just a few years. So they worry about that. It's something that is just consuming their mind all the time. And when it comes to things like school shootings, there's this profound feeling of uncertainty when it comes to other people. And I think that marks this generation as a big difference as well. When you have kids that they're dealing with terrorists, so they don't know who or where or when they could be attacked, they don't know what they could do to provoke somebody, to provoke a classmate. We're dealing with kids that the enemy is sort of lurking within, and they have a hard time distinguishing who is good, who is bad, what is good, what is evil. So that's another thing as adults, we have to really help them navigate this challenging, difficult circumstance. It's something that adults even struggle to figure out. It's a scary world out there, but as teenagers and young kids, their brains aren't fully developed, as we know. So they have these irrational thoughts. They have these emotional roller coasters going on in their lives. So to them, the worry is so much stronger.
For parents, grandparents, educators, other things that we might want to know, other things that we might want to consider when raising or caring for or teaching this generation of Homelanders?
I think Dr. Tim Elmore is, he studies generational differences, and he said it very well one time. He said, we must prepare the child for the past, not the past for the child. And that's our reality as adults, as caring adults. We can't pave the way for our kids. In fact, I think sometimes when we hold them close, which is a natural reaction when our kids are worried or they're upset about something, in some ways when we hold them so close, we may be stunting their ability to handle this world of terror that they've been born into. So we have to let them spread their wings. We have to prepare them for that path, but we can't just ignore the issues that they're facing. And I know, you know, it's even hard for me as a millennial, it's hard for me to say, you know, to not say, back in my day, when I was your age, this is what we had to deal with. You know, they can't believe that there was a world without cell phones at some point. So we really have to resist that urge to say, you know, back in my day, because it's a different day. It's a different world that they're living in. We don't want to ignore the issues. We certainly don't want to discount how they're feeling, because that's their reality. The way they feel, the worry they feel, and the anxiety, that's the reality that they have that they're wrestling with. Another thing we often do is we just completely turn off the TV, or we think, you know, I'll solve this by not having a computer and not having the internet in my house, not giving my child a smartphone to play with. And that's not always the answer either. We can't just ignore the issues going on around us. You know, as Christians, we want to be in the world, but not of it. So how do we navigate within our world as concerned, as thoughtful Christians? Because we have the ability to be this light to a dark world, with the Holy Spirit working and shining through us. So I think that's another thing. You know, don't just turn off the TV or take the phone away. Help your child or your grandchild navigate through the issues that they're going to face.
Absolutely. All good things to think through, especially that they're to realize, to recognize that their day is different than our day. You know, back in my day, yeah, it's very easy for us to fall into that trap. Back in my day, you got it so easy today, kids.
Right. And you know that I've talked to people of different generations. I've talked a lot to my grandparents and my parents, and I think older generations are a little confused about this generation, because they look at it and say, you know, these kids have it easy. They have great lives. They're able to do so many things. They're exposed to so much. So, you know, we don't always see that there are big differences. You know, the social media, the technology, that has brought in more diversity into our lives, more voices. So it's more for our kids to wade through, to figure out what is the truth. And as Christians, that is the most valuable thing that we offer to this generation. Our most valuable contribution to these homelanders is to point them to Jesus. You know, he is unchanging, he is stable, he is a protector. And these are all things that this generation craves. They need to know that there is somebody constant that cares for them, that loves them no matter what. And as Christian adults, I think that's our role as well. We need to be like that. We need to be like Jesus in their lives. We need to be loving and caring, and we need to take care of them and just remind them that no matter what terrors or worries they're facing, that there is a constant presence in their lives.
Absolutely. To comfort them in their fears, to comfort them with the gospel, with Jesus, and to know that he is the one who calms the storm. He forgives our sins, and that's the only thing that we really have that truly to fear in this world is our sin and our separation from God, but Jesus has already taken care of that. Well, Cassie, it's always good to talk with you, check in with you on these generational studies, and want to let folks know that they can be watching for some contributions from you on Youth eSource, youthesource.org. Great materials there to help parents, teachers, leaders in youth leaders in congregations, pastors, all to help us understand this generation, the homelander generation, and youth in general. Thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family, Cassie.
Yeah, God's blessings to you.
Thanks. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to talk with Chris Brown, president of the National Fatherhood Initiative. Can horseplay fit into your family's day-to-day routine? Should it? We'll talk with Christopher Brown, the president of the National Fatherhood Initiative, up next right here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The NAACP has gotten the deserved reputation for being the National Association for the Abortion of Colored People. A black pro-life leader was sued by them for this parody. The group's supposed to be for the advancement of all African Americans. But after the midterm election, the group totally ignored these black candidates who won their hard-fought races. Mia Love to the House in Utah, the first black woman from her party elected to Congress. Tim Scott, the first black to win a statewide race in the South since Reconstruction. And Texas House candidate Will Hurd. Why did the NAACP ignore their victories? They're all pro-life Republicans. It's true. It really is the National Association for the Abortion of Colored People.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
KFUO celebrates our 90th anniversary. On December 14th, 1924, from a small attic studio in St. Louis, KFUO was heard for the very first time. Our founders used the motto, keeping forward, upward, and onward, to go along with the call letters assigned at the station. And from that day on, KFUO has moved forward through each decade, proclaiming a Christ-centered message. We've moved upward with broadcasting in AM, FM, HD, and satellite syndication of KFUO programs. Worldwide KFUO continues to move onward, using today's technologies including internet streaming, on-demand programs, and podcasting. The mission of that first day is the mission we have today. Go out and proclaim the gospel. Now, through the end of January, join us for fun and memories during this 90-day celebration with a new theme each week, reflecting on our 90 years of ministry. KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Reverend Dr. Matthew C. Harrison of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod recently said these words regarding the importance of the work of Concordia Historical Institute.
When you forget your past, you forget the gospel. You become locked into your own little part of time. As you study the past and know the past and know what happened in the past, you see God at work. And you see Christ.
Discover your Lutheran history at ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org.
Following the National March for Life, join LCMS Life Ministry beginning January 22nd for 3 days at the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, Theological Motivation, Practical Know-How, and Valuable Time with Lutheran pro-lifers from across the country. Speakers will encourage you in advocating for life through your vocation as a Christian citizen to stand for those who will never take their first steps. LCMS.org/life or 314-996-1711.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is time to get into our second conversation today. Dads are important. I'm a dad. I love being a dad. One of the things I love doing the most is just goofing around and playing with my son and doing all those things that dads do. Wrestling with the kids. Well, our son's 14 months old. Should I wrestle with him? It's a good question. We're going to talk about it here in just a little bit. We're going to talk with Chris Brown, president of the National Fatherhood Initiative. Christopher Brown, thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family. It's good to have you with us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Tell us, Chris, tell us about yourself, your family, and what led up to your involvement with the National Fatherhood Initiative.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, I am a dad, like you are, Andy, and my kids are a little bit older. I have two girls, one who is 19 and away at college, which has been a challenge. As close as we are, it's been tough to be separated from her for such long periods of time. I also have a 16-year-old who's a junior in high school, and she's looking at exiting the house. So my wife and I are about to become empty nesters, so that's going to be a huge change for us, especially given that my kids often call me a professional dad, meaning that I'm not only a dad in my personal life, but that's my focus as a profession. In terms of what led me to National Fatherhood Initiative, I had a very difficult relationship with my father growing up. Although he was physically present for most of my childhood, my parents eventually divorced when I was a senior in high school, he was not emotionally or spiritually present in my life and the life of my younger brother. And so, you know, one of the things we often talk about at NFI is, you know, we help dads in all kinds of situations. These are dads who may be physically separated from their children, yes, but there are many, many children who grow up with fathers in their lives, in their homes, who are just not emotionally or spiritually engaged in the lives of their children. So it was a very difficult time growing up, and I remember, you know, very distinctly, you know, hanging out with my friends who had good fathers and seeing that closeness between them and their fathers. I mean, frankly, I was, and unfortunately, I was envious, and I was jealous of that kind of situation. So you know, I grew into an adult, I became very committed to the idea of being an involved father myself. And then I'm also an anthropologist by training. And so as I began to explore how to apply my anthropology training, I really started to get into community-based aspects of creating programs to involve fathers in the lives of their children. And eventually, a role opened at National Fatherhood Initiative just a few years after it started, and I applied for it and fortunately was hired. And today I'm president of the organization.
What is the main work of National Fatherhood Initiative today?
Well, our mission is very child-centered. It is to improve the well-being of children by increasing the proportion of children growing up with involved, responsible, and committed fathers in their lives. So when we look at the data, 24 million children in this country go to bed every night in a home in which their biological father does not live. To put it another way, that's one out of every three kids. So if you think about your own child, and let's say your child is in elementary school, three out of every 10 kids in that class are likely to be growing up without their father. That's dramatic, because when we think about the impact of father absence, it is really a core cause of so many of the social ills that we see: poverty, teenage pregnancy, drug and alcohol abuse, and even suicide, and that's just to name a few. So that's our mission, and we accomplish our mission through what we call our 3E strategy: educate, equip, and engage. So first of all, we educate all Americans, especially dads, about the important role that fathers play in their children's lives. So we produce and share a lot of research related to the one, negative consequences of father absence, but just as importantly, the positive impact of father presence. The second thing we do is we equip direct service providers at the national, state, and local level. These are organizations that provide direct services to fathers and families with the resources that they need, such as father involvement programs, online resources, group-based programs, brochures, pamphlets, on all sorts of things that help dads be better dads. So we're very much a capacity builder at the community level. And then finally, we engage all sectors of society, because this issue isn't one that, you know, government should just address, or the nonprofit community should just address, or the Christian community and the faith community should address. It affects every single sector of community life, from business to the military to corrections. And so we focus heavily on working in communities, working with the military, all four branches, and some of the smaller branches as well. And then finally, in the correction system, where we help incarcerated fathers develop connections with their children while they're in prison and as they are released from prison and go back into the community.
Fathers are, as you pointed out, fathers are an important part of shaping this generation, shaping the lives of children. When fathers are absent, then that shapes this generation as well. And it's not just something that only the Christians, the Christian community should address. Certainly is something that we as Christians should be concerned about. It's not something that specifically the government alone should address, or just nonprofit organizations, but something that we work together on in helping shape generations. If you want to have influence over the future of a society, a country, then be influential in the lives of children, right?
Absolutely, because it is you know, from our perspective, the most consequential social trend of our time. If you look at any negative outcome when it comes to the well-being of children, it is either correlated with or directly caused by father absence. Now, this doesn't mean that when children grow up without their dads that they're doomed to mm-hmm. failure. We see many individuals grow into healthy, well-functioning adults who grew up without their dads. But from a population-based perspective, and that's what we're talking about here, when we look at our culture, when we look at our society, growing up without a father places children at huge risk. So if we really want to maximize our effort, in other words, we need to focus on those core issues. We need to not focus as much effort on the symptoms. Now, we need to deal with the symptoms. So we need to provide programs that help alleviate poverty. We need to provide housing for people who are homeless. We need to do all of these things that really tug at people's hearts. But what we talk about at NFI is we're a second question organization, meaning that, okay, you have a child, you have a family who is facing these challenges. And oftentimes what we do is we give our dollars, we give our effort, our volunteer time, to helping those families after the fact. And while that's wonderful and it's needed, we need to be asking the second question, Andy. Why is it that that family, why is it that that child finds themselves in that particular situation? Once we ask that second question, then we're led to mm-hmm. some of the root causes of those issues, such as father absence.
Let's talk about the important things that fathers provide. You recently wrote an article that was published in the Huffington Post and now it is available there and on the National Fatherhood Initiative website as well, entitled Horseplay is Vital for Your Kids. And obviously the title catches your attention. What prompted you to even to think to address this topic of horseplay?
Well, a couple of things. One, first of all, is I was reminded when I ran across a very interesting book that I really encourage your readers to consider purchasing, called The Art of Roughhousing, written by two doctors about the benefits to children of rough and tumble play, what we often call horseplay. And it just made me think back to, you know, my own childhood, where I really kind of lacked that interaction with my parents, particularly my father, but also the fact that I was very physical in terms of the play with my girls. You know, we often think about, you know, oh yeah, you got to be physical with your boys, right? But girls want and need just as much rough and tumble play as boys do. Because we find that when that happens, research finds that, you know, when girls engage in that kind of tumble play, they have very, very positive outcomes in terms of the things that they're interested in, and, you know, broader interests, broader perspectives on life and the things that they can do. So, you know, I mentioned in the article this game that my daughters and I used to play called the Tack Baby. And what I did, it was just a blast. I mean, my girls had just a great time. And, you know, the main objective that I had was to help my girls learn how to engage in that kind of play, because it really helps them learn how to regulate their emotions. And that's one of the primary things that good parents do, is help their children learn how to regulate their emotions. Yes, feel your emotions, but learn how to regulate them as opposed to control them as you get older. And so one of the things that we would do is when the girls got too rough with me, when they tried to get too physical and actually would try to hurt me, as children sometimes do to their parents when they're very, very small, is I would stop the game and just have a conversation with them. You'd be surprised, even with a toddler, the kind of in-depth conversations you can really have and what they really are able to understand. And so they would learn how to adjust their emotions within the game. And so I thought, you know, given how parents today, how much easier it is to direct your children towards the kind of play that is not physical, it's not outdoors, it's indoors, and often it's interacting with video games and things of that nature where the parents aren't really interacting with their kids in the same way that rough and tumble play does, and that definitely has negative consequences for children.
It is, with the technology that we have today, with everything available 24/7, so readily accessible, you know, any kind of children's programming available now with, you know, on demand, and I'm speaking from experience here. It's really easy to pull up children's programs that will appease and entertain a child when you have things like Netflix or Hulu Amazon, things like that. You can pull up children's programming pretty quickly and, you know, plop them down in front of a TV, hand them an iPad, an iPhone, or, you know, a mobile device, and you can entertain them at least for a good 15, 20 minutes. And that's, you know, that's for a parent, that's like, I can get two loads of laundry in and, you know, I can get the dishes all done. It's very easy for us to, or I can read this much, or I can catch up on all my Facebook or email or something like that during that time. It's very easy for us to plop kids down in front of a TV or, because that technology, those resources are available there. But you pointed out in this article and just now that this physical interaction, this playing, really provides something for kids more so than just plopping them down in front of a TV, this kind of sedentary lifestyle that we're so easily prone to. Actually playing, this physical play, can be a really good thing for them. What is it that, well, first of all, let's define what horseplay is, because sometimes the question of safety comes to mind when we start talking about horseplay.
Absolutely. I mean, horseplay, broadly speaking, is just, you know, physical play, physical interaction between parents and their children, or between, you know, siblings or your friends, etc. It's very interactive in that sense, but it involves touching and involves, you know, physical contact, and it can be done and it should be done in a very safe way. We're not talking about putting children at undue risk. We're talking about just rolling around on the floor, you know, tickling your child, and taking your child to the community playground and getting involved with them through the tools that exist there for rough and tumble play. So that's the kind of thing we're talking about. It's not dangerous play whatsoever.
So it's not dangerous, but what is it about this this horse play, this physical play, that is beneficial to children? And what is the evidence that that this physical play is beneficial to them?
Well, as the book The Art of Roughhousing points out, and it brings in a lot of the research that's been done around this kind of play, it really helps, you know, children to be smarter, more emotionally intelligent, and that's as you and some of your listeners may be aware, there's been a lot of talk in recent years, primarily as a result of the work that a wonderful psychologist named Daniel Goleman has done around this idea of emotional intelligence. It's different than academic intelligence. It's being emotionally intelligent, being able to read people, being able to understand how people are feeling, and being able to react appropriately to that, but also understanding your own emotions and your own feelings. So, as I mentioned with our game Attack Baby, that was what I was really focusing on, was helping my girls learn how to be emotionally intelligent. It also helps children to appreciate being physical and physical fitness. So both of my girls, for example, have been very involved in athletics throughout their childhood, primarily through club and school soccer. And they really enjoy being physical. They enjoy getting out and sweating, and they like the feeling that they get from that. And so, you know, when children are initiated into being physical, getting into their bodies and using their bodies at a very young age, they're much more likely, as they age, become adolescents, and even into adulthood, to enjoy being physical and being physically fit. And those are just some of the benefits.
And all good benefits. Now, if someone doesn't have the gift of this physical play with dad or with the whole family, that doesn't mean that they're automatically going to live, you know, that they're destined to live a sedentary, unhealthy lifestyle by any means, right?
No, not at all. And hopefully for those folks, they have someone who will enter their lives, or maybe currently in their lives, maybe a relative or someone that they encounter through school, a coach or a teacher, someone like that, or perhaps a minister or somebody in their faith community or church, who will, you know, expose them to the kinds of things that can benefit them in the same way that rough and tumble play does if they don't have access to that. One other thing I want to mention, too, about this kind of play, and let's talk about it from a Christian-based perspective for a moment, is, you know, we see all of these changes that are taking place in society, and it seems like, you know, the changes are just more rapid than ever. You know, the new product, the new gadget that comes out that, you know, once again creates another temptation for children and another temptation for parents to have children engaging with those things rather than engaging with their parents. And one thing that hasn't changed is that God hardwires children to interact with their parents. That's why they love this rough and tumble play so much and why they crave it so much. You know, it got to the point sometimes where I just had to tell my girls no. You know, I know you want to do this, but, you know, at this point I don't have the time. You know, God hardwires children and will do so, you know, for all time. And so we need to heed that message. We need to heed that reality and to act accordingly if we are to, from my perspective, be truly committed Christians in terms of how we parent our children.
Well, this is just this article that you wrote is just one example of the resources available from National Fatherhood Initiative that make us think about our vocation, our opportunities as fathers. What are other benefits or other resources that are available through National Fatherhood Initiative?
Well, let me point out just a few, particularly those that we have for Christians. Even though we are a nonpartisan and nonsectarian organization, we do work very closely with Christian-based organizations such as Prison Fellowship, which focuses on working with incarcerated individuals, and also with CareNet, which is the largest national network of pregnancy care centers that provides counseling and alternatives to abortion. So we're very committed to working with the Christian community in these ways. Obviously, folks can come to our website, www.fatherhood.org. Fathers, individuals, anyone can subscribe to our Father Factor blog, which is where one of the versions of the article you mentioned on rough housing appears, and get information and tips and guidance that way. They can also subscribe to a regular email that we send out as well. But also for fathers who are interested in self-study from a Christian-based perspective around being a responsible father, we have what's called the 24/7 Dad Power Hour. It's a collection of three Christian-based programs that fathers can do on a self-paced basis, but also can do in a small group environment, which, as you know, is a very, very popular format within the Christian community for getting people together and growing as Christians. So it can be facilitated by a father who really wants to say, hey, you know what, I want to help other dads in my community or within my church to be better dads so they can acquire these resources. They're very, very inexpensive and start conducting work themselves on self-paced level or with small groups. Folks can also donate to NFI. We're in the middle of our calendar year-end push for donations, and they can donate to us and help support our work broadly and also the work that we do within the Christian community. But those are some of the, I think, the best resource is probably that your listeners might be interested in.
Sure, sure. Now, National Fatherhood Initiative, we certainly think of dads and kids benefiting from that. How can moms gain from National Fatherhood Initiative?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Andy, because one of the things that we really focus on is helping moms to involve dads more in the lives of their children. One of the things that research shows very clearly is that moms, sometimes unknowingly, can act as a gatekeeper in terms of fathers' access to their children. And this not only occurs when parents are separated or divorced, or maybe they were never married and the mom has custody of her children, but even when couples are together, married couples, for example, sometimes the mom actually acts as a gatekeeper in terms of a father's access to his children. So what we do is we help moms, when it's appropriate and when it's safe, to be gateways, to understand why dad's so important, and to then understand how to facilitate that. So we have several print-based resources that we call pocketbooks for moms on how they can better communicate with the fathers of their children, because that's one of the biggest challenges that we hear from moms and from dads is how do I communicate more effectively with the other parent? So we provide those kinds of resources. And then we also have a program called Understanding Dad. It's an 8-week program that can be done in a group-based setting, and it's facilitated by someone where groups of moms come together and they actually understand, one, why dad is so important in the lives of their children, and two, how can I better communicate? So it builds the mom's skills around communicating more effectively with the father of their children.
Well, all great resources available at the fatherhood.org website, and we'll provide a link of that today with the program. Any other events or resources you'd like to point us to as we wrap up our conversation today?
I think that's pretty much it, Andy. I just encourage folks to really take advantage of our resources, and to once again, consider even a small donation to National Fatherhood Initiative in our work, because it's kind of ironic, even though we deal with a core issue that affects so many of the ills that we see in this world. We do have a challenge in raising funds and raising donations because, as I mentioned before, we're a second question organization. And unfortunately, so often, people just don't think about the fact that, if I give to an organization working on a core issue, my dollar is going to go even farther than if I give somewhere where we're just dealing with a symptom. So, again, I'm not saying that people should make a choice necessarily between the dollars they give somewhere else and us, but to maybe expand their giving a little bit, as Christians to support an organization like NFI.
And you can find out more at fatherhood.org. Our guest today has been Christopher Brown, president of National Fatherhood Initiative. Chris, thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Anytime, Andy. Thanks for having me.
It's been great talking with you. Coming up in just a little bit, we've got Thy Strong Word with Pastor Whedon, study of God's Word today, as we do every day right here on Worldwide KFUO, celebrating 90 years of proclaiming the good news of Jesus Christ. Stick around for more great programming. Thy Strong Word, Pastor Whedon, up next on listener-supported Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.